Okay, Alexander, let's talk about the riots going on in the US, the protests, the riots, the regime change operation. And I would like to kind of keep a loose conversation here on what's going on in the US and maybe try to frame it around some previous riots that have taken place and protests and regime change operations that have been taking place the past, say, 10, 20, maybe 30 years. Maybe try to add some historical context into what's happening in the US, if there is historical context, if there are parallels with some of the riots that we've seen, through the last decade or so, decade plus, and if we can draw some commonalities in some of the methods used to maybe incite the mob, maybe some of the methods used to go after police, some of the methods used to overthrow and topple governments, because I think that is also relevant in this case, whether it's being used by the people on the streets or whether it's being used by the media. And one of the regime change operations, which some people claim were peaceful protests, but they turned into an actual civil war and tore a country apart, that comes to mind for me right now is Ukraine and the Maidan. I also think of what happened in the Balkans and in Yugoslavia, which also tore the region apart. I can think of Georgia. I can think of the Orange Revolution. I can think of the Arab Spring. I even think of during the vote in Greece for the euro and as to what's going to happen with the austerity and the euro and Tsipras rising to power and how the radical left government of Syriza was promoting rioting in Athens. One riot became extremely violent where they burned down the I believe it was a Piraeus Bank branch and they killed four people inside, including a pregnant woman. And I remember going on to the square in Syntagma as the riots were happening, and everyone knew that it was Syriza and Tsipras and the radical left that was, pushing these riots onto the street as they were ascending towards power. They were gaining strength in the political class. And I remember, listening to the people that were rioting, the people moving towards the square, and they were speaking all kinds of languages except Greek, Spanish, Italian. And, I sat to myself, I was looking at my friend and I was like, we're like, where the hell are these people coming from? Who are these people? Because they're not from here. And I think that's something you hear a lot in the US now, what's happening in certain cities. People say these people that are destroying these communities, they're not from here. So Alexander, I said a lot of stuff. Like I said, let's keep this free flowing and just talk freely, touch whatever historical points you want to hit upon as to what's happening in the US and what you've seen in your experience as an analyst over the past 10
Yeah,
to
I
20, 30
mean,
years.
and not just as an analyst, because of course, like yourself, I've lived through some of these events. Now, I mean, I'm going to make a general observation, which is that a lot of people are talking about how these protests have bear or riots to bear resemblances to events which have happened in the United States before. And people talk about the summer of 68 when, there was, after Martin Luther King was killed, there was, big uprisings in many cities and all those sorts of things. This is different. It feels different to me, actually. I think that obviously there is something of those earlier protests about these, and there are economic grievances, no doubt. There are social differences. There are race issues. There are also, unquestionably, as there were in those other protests, an element of people coming, who cruel, straightforward criminal activity, people looting and ransacking things and that kind of thing. But there is something a bit more organized about these and more targeted about these protests. And I have to say this, I mean, it does remind me a little bit, in fact, not bit, it reminds me a lot of some of these protests that you've been talking about. And I can't help but think, I couldn't, can't help but think that Once again, we've seen some of these regime change operations that the United States has been exporting around the world. They're now getting re-imported back. So that things that the United States has been doing in other places, you mentioned Ukraine. I think Ukraine for me was the extreme example of this because there was a huge amount of violence. People always talk, skate over how much violence there was on Maidan Square and around Maidan Square. And I remember hearing again, we can't talk, we can't call this rioting. We've got to call this protesting. These are the peaceful protesters. The police are the violent people who are actually attacking these peaceful
The
protesters.
revolution of dignity, or what was
The
it branded?
revolution, exactly. The revolution of dignity is what it was called, and all of that. But you encounter this. You encounter this else. I mean, there's also, I have to say this, and some people may not be happy. There was some element of that in the protests in Hong Kong last year, also, which were getting some support from some people in the United States. And of course, we saw that in Belgrade. We saw that in Moldova. We saw that in Bulgaria, where I remember the Bulgarian Parliament building in one protest was burnt down. And these are always peaceful protesters who were doing these sort of things. And as I said, it seems to me that some of this has been now re-imported back to the United States. And there were certain features that all of these events had in common. There was social media playing a huge role in organizing these protests. And see social media being used in something like the same way in the protests in the United States also. And of course, you also have some of these organizations that are involved in some of the protests in Europe. I'm talking about, organizations of, if you like, almost, how shall I put it, the Foreign Legion of activists that you were talking about who move around and go from one protest in Greece and then they go off to Ukraine and then they go off to France. France has been in a place where this kind of thing goes on a lot. And then now some of them maybe despite all the lockdowns, maybe they found their way into the United States also. But
Paid agitators,
paid agitators, exactly,
for contract agitators.
exactly, exactly. And there's something of that again here, which wasn't true of the protests that you used to see in the United States in the 60s and the 70s and even later. So there is something different about this. I'm going to say something else, which is, I again, it's difficult to judge from a distance, but these protests not only look more organized and more targeted, they also look a lot smaller. As if, which again lends, to me at least, a feeling that there's some degree of control over them.
Why do you say that if they're smaller, they have more control?
Because of course, if you have a vast mass of people coming out, that by definition is a more spontaneous thing. If you're doing something which is more controlled, it does tend to be quite a few small group of people with activists running it more effectively. Activists have more difficulty controlling a big protest secretly, and that's a very important point. So if you're talking about events like the one, for example, in Maidan, the number of people who were ever on Maidan Square at any one time was actually quite small. Usually, it was no more than a couple of thousand people. And the same, by the way, is true in was true as some of the more violent protests in places like Greece. Most people who find themselves in a violent protest and who are peaceful people go away. They don't want to be, most people are law-abiding. They may be angry, they may want to protest, but they do not want to be involved in something that's turning violent. So my experience is that big protests tend to be peaceful. Small protests tend to be violent. And when they're violent, they tend to be more controlled if there is an intention to target them in particular ways. So that's my feeling about this. This is different from protests that I've remembered in the United States in the past.
Right, a lot of protests in a lot of cities, but smaller, controllable protests.
Smaller, more controllable. That's my sense of this. Right. And with a more organized nature, with a much more organized form on social media, and much more in contact with the political system. I mean, clearly there are elements within the political system which are, you know, not sorry to see these protests happen. Let me put it like that, and using very measured and careful words there.
Yeah, I remember the Arab Spring I was in Silicon Valley at the time, and everyone was gushing about how social media was used during the Arab Spring. And they actually brought a reporter who utilized social media to speak at some event in the Valley, and how he utilized social media. And I forgot the country. I think maybe Tunisia.
Yeah.
Maybe it was Tunisia that he came from.
That's right.
And, you know, he talked about how he utilized social media to get the Arab Spring going, and just people were giddy about it. I mean, it was like they discovered, you know, they discovered gravity. You know, they were like, okay, so now we can use this tool.
I remember this very well. I mean, it was already starting to be used in Yugoslavia. But the place where I really noticed it was when there was a big protest and about a regime change operation in Moldova. And there was an election in Moldova, and Twitter was used to organize protests against that election, and they resulted in the parliament building being burned to the ground again, or stormed, or something of that kind. But it was clearly a very organized event based in that case around Twitter. And again, there was huge enthusiasm and excitement about this. You know, the Twitter was being used to, you know, carry out these huge changes in these countries, disastrous for those countries, by the way. Moldova has never really recovered from the, you know, the imbalance, the destabilization that particular event caused. But now we see it happening in the United States.
Yeah. Let's go back to Ukraine real quick. And then after Ukraine, I want to talk a little bit about Moscow and Russia as well, because they were caught off guard. I believe it was 2012 with riots that didn't go over too well. But and anyway, we'll get to that story as well. But I want to revisit Ukraine and the Maidan. And one of the tactics that I saw in the Maidan that they used to really escalate the violence further and get to their goal of overthrowing the Yanukovych government and eventually, you know, pushing the country towards a civil war, was they targeted the police, the riot police or the full-time police officers. And they were targeting them in two interesting ways. Number one is they were bringing sharpshooters from out of the country. Some people speculate that they were Georgian. Mm-hmm. I think we have pretty good evidence that these people were from Georgia.
I think very strong evidence.
Yeah. And they were positioning them at the Ukraine hotel on the Maidan Plaza. Mm-hmm. And they were, you know, taking sniper shots at the police in order to create that tension between the officers and the crowds. Do you see some parallels in those tactics that were being used in order to go after the cops, so that then the cops can go after the crowds and things escalate? Do you see some parallels, even loose parallels, with those tactics as to what's going on in the United States?
Well, of course there are. I mean, they're clear parallels. I mean, there's clearly violence being targeted at the police. The police are clearly identified now as, you know, the enemy, the force that needs to be overthrown, or, you know, the police are very much the target for these protests. And that has lowered the threshold of violence against the police. So people are prepared to, or there's a willingness to countenance the targeting of police and violence against police officers, which in a country like the United States, there generally isn't. So there is that element also. And of course, if you start shooting at police officers, they shoot back, people in the middle get killed, and then you blame it all on the police officers. So this is what happened in Maidan Square. And quite likely we're going to see it in the United States also. That
Yeah,
isn't
my
to say, by the way, that there aren't the prop things problems with the police in the United States, but you're talking about parallels now, and we're talking about parallels in this program, and they do seem they are there, definitely.
Yeah, I'm talking about how you incite, the mob, how you get things escalating, and in the Maidan,
Well,
the snipers were
provocation.
taking, they were taking, yeah, provocation. They were taking shots
Provocation,
into the
Jackson.
crowd, and they would hit
Absolutely.
police, but they would also hit innocent civilians, and then, things would just,
Absolutely.
barrel out of control from that point
Yes.
onwards.
Absolutely.
Another.
Provocation tactics, as they're called, are a well-known device for creating instability.
Yeah, another. Event that took place in Ukraine, not the Maidan, but it was in Crimea, and I believe it was Sevastopol, and it was at the either the parliament, the main parliament building, or the mayor's house, the mayor's residence, is as they were grappling with what was going to happen in Crimea, and Crimea obviously was going to break away. That was the undertone there, that Crimea and the people of Crimea, they saw what was happening in Kiev, and they said, we're going to break away, and we don't want any part of this coup. And so there was a gathering. Like you said, it wasn't a huge gathering.
No, they
It
never
was
are.
substantial, but it was manageable of a crowd of people at the mayor's headquarters, the
Yes.
mayor's residence, or the parliament building. I forget. Someone in the comments will refresh my memory here. And I remember watching a documentary many years ago, and they had a Russian intelligence officer who was, looking at the crowd, saying it was amazing that this area where there was, 500, 600 people didn't result in, mass violence breaking out on the peninsula, because he was saying, look at that guy over there in the red shirt, look at that guy over there in the red shirt. These guys are paid agitators, and look at how they're moving the crowd. Look at how they're trying to get something to happen. Look at how they're trying to incite violence amongst the crowd. And he was pointing out all these instances as to these people in the crowd whose job it was to try and turn what was, in essence, a peaceful gathering of a large crowd into something much more violent. But they sniffed them out. They sniffed out these people. They got them out of there, and nothing happened. And of course, the rest is history, in that Crimea was able to break away from Ukraine in a relatively peaceful manner, actually a very peaceful manner. No one died from what happened in Crimea, from them moving away from Ukraine. So what do you make of that? The fact that you have to identify the agitators early, otherwise things can escalate.
Absolutely. Well, this is a very interesting film. In fact, the one that you're referring to, a documentary, it wasn't in Sevastopol, by the way. It was in Simferopol, which is the capital of Crimea.
Simferopol.
And there was a protest, and it was a couple of thousand people. And as you rightly say, the Russians were keeping a very careful track on it, and they were able to identify within it, not just because they knew them, but because they knew the way these people work, and they know how people, within a crowd, are able to manipulate and control the crowd. They were able to identify exactly who the various individuals who were trying to organize and orchestrate this crowd were. And that particular instance was a case, unquestionably, where the intention was to start violence. If that protest had not been controlled by the authorities, contained by the authorities in the way that it was, there would have been violence, and that would, of course, have completely changed the entire dynamic of the situation in Crimea. The Russians, who were by this point very familiar with these tactics, were obviously very, very much on the alert, and they were able to use their intelligence and their information to break the protest up, to isolate these people who were sort of orchestrating and running it, and to basically keep the situation calm. So it's a very, very interesting film, probably not easy for our viewers to find, but highly educational for anybody who wants to see it. Now, I hope that in the United States, that kind of information also exists. To what extent it does, I don't know. But if you want to understand how crowds can be controlled, and how it's possible to disperse that kind of a crowd without violence. That is the film to tell, which will tell you how to do it.
Yeah, I think it's Crimea Return Home or something,
something like that.
All right, now let's talk briefly about some riots that took place in Moscow. One of them turned out poorly. One of them turned out well and got diffused. And the first one, I think it was around, was it 2012 or 2010, where there were riots in Moscow?
Yeah.
And those did escalate, and they were not handled well. But subsequent riots and protests that did form over the years, they got squashed. And one was very recent. I think one was maybe 2 years ago.
Yes.
I mean, they got squashed almost immediately. I mean, you know, on the spot within a few hours. That was that. So, you know, get into that. Did the Russians learn something from it? Was it 2010 or 12?
It was 12. It was 2012. Right. And the Russians learned very quickly how to organize a response to these sort of events. And you're quite right. I mean, it did almost slip out of their hands the first time in 2012. To be very clear, I don't think it ever posed a threat to the government. The government didn't want to see a major escalation of the situation in Moscow. There was an attempt, as I remember, to try and set up a tent city in Moscow, a protest city. The authorities were not going to let that happen, which they were absolutely right not to let it happen. And they acted very fast in order to contain it. Now, that was not, by the way, an Occupy Moscow type scenario. It was a very, very carefully planned protest, which wasn't really a protest. It was, in effect, at the beginning of a regime change operation. But as the authorities got on top of it very, very quickly, very, very effectively, once they learned what was going on, and they learned an awful lot of lessons from their handling of it. And the event which we were talking about just now in Crimea happened in 2014. And the information and the experience they learned from dealing with the protest in Moscow in 2012 undoubtedly helped them deal with the situation 2 years later in Crimea. So, you know, they learned an awful lot from dealing with a protest like that. Peaceful protests are fully legitimate, and they are not only to be encouraged, they're part of democracy. Violent protests within democracies are not the same thing. And when they escalate into riots, and when they're controlled also by agitators, they become extremely dangerous.
Yeah, I don't think they were able to identify agitators early on in the US, at least the individual cities weren't.
No. Well, I mean, if you're talking about a place like Minnesota.
Yeah.
I get the impression that the authorities there, as I understand it, I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't know the political geography of the United States very well. But what I understand is that it's a pretty, pretty liberal place. That, you know, is I think where Klobuchar, if I got her name right, is the governor of there. So I don't think that these people are the kind of people who would probably look for or to control protests of this kind. That's my instinct anyway. So I think that you'll probably find a patchwork of different attitudes towards protests across the United States. I don't think Minnesota is a particularly good place to expect the authorities to take to use a firm, but it should be stressed always, disciplined hand in handling protests of this kind.
Yeah. All right. We'll leave it there. Alexander McCurse, editor-in-chief of The Durand. Thank you very much, guys. If you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on that notifications bell. Also, make sure to share the channel with everybody you know and drop us a comment. Comments help us out a whole lot. And go to The Durand shop. Pick up some merchandise. We've got magic mugs. We've got polo shirts. We've got t-shirts. We've got all kinds of good things. And also go to our friends at The Patriotic Legacy and pick up a Patriot Beacon flashlight. This is the Swiss Army knife of flashlights, but it is made in America. It ships internationally, and you get 20% off when you use the code Durand20 at checkout. And they're running a contest where you can win a blue camouflage Patriot Beacon 3. You can also win a tactical pen and a monkey fist ball as well in that contest. You're automatically entered when you make a purchase at the site Patriotic Legacy. The link is in the description box down below, Alexander.
Indeed, and can I just say, on to over and above all the things that Alex was just saying, it's the best torch, as we say in England, or flashlight, as we say in the United States, in the world. It is amazing. It is m amazingly well made. It's one of these wonderful, strong American products. It's rugged. In fact, it feels indestructible. And you know, if you're like me and you're sort of fumbling around and you're dropping things, you get that sense of assurance when you're holding a really strong, well-made quality article like this. And of course, it's a wonderful torch or flashlight. It's got an amazing beam. You can see in extraordinary distances in the dark with it. You can dim it if you need to dim it, you know, if you're indoors, for example, or if you don't want to blind people, you can dim it quite a lot. If you're on the road and you want to alert people to where you are, you can flash it. It does a flash, things like that. It's also got extraordinary number of accessories. So if you have it in your car and, you know, perish the thought you're in an accident, it's got all kinds of tools. You can smash the windshield with this. You can also use it as a hammer, by the way. You can cut your seat belt. It's got a seat belt cutter. If you lose your way and your sat nav doesn't work, it's got a compass there. If you are out and about and you wanted to attract attention, it's got an alarm, which is really very useful. One of the things I particularly love about it is that it's solar powered. So, you know, it's the kind of thing you don't have to worry about putting batteries in, because if you keep it in the light, it will never fail you. And because it's solar powered, you can do another amazing thing with it. You can recharge your laptop or your iPhone or your smartphone or your tablet. It's got a port there for you to do it. So it's just packs this enormous number of things, and it's just incredibly well made, and it's got this beautiful light. It's the best torch, unequivocally, that you can have. And it's got one other thing I forgot to mention. It's got a magnet, so if you want to put it on the side of your car or, you know, somewhere in your house, well, you can just stick it there and it'll be safe. So it is an amazing thing. You should definitely join this contest. Get yourself one of these. It's the best torch in the world. Torch, as we say in England, flashlight, as you say in the United States. But I would remind you what Alex said, it's made in the United States, but it's shipped internationally also. So it's not just Patriot beacons that you can find through us. We've also got our amazing shop too. We have our great and famous magic mugs, which we must never forget or overlook, the best mugs in the world. We have our amazing shirts, like the wonderful long-sleeved 100% cotton t-shirt I'm wearing now. We've got short-sleeved t-shirts too. We've got V-neck shirts. We've got the best polo shirts anywhere, the most stylish and glamorous polo shirts. And we've also got hats, hoodies, stickers, and we've got amazing ebooks. You can find them all in our shop. You can find how to get to the Patriot Beacon from what Alex is going to tell you in a moment. Alex will tell you how to buy from our shop and how to join this amazing contest.
To go to the Durant Shop, you'll find the link in the description box down below, thedurantshop.com. And for the Patriot Beacon, to enter the contest to get 20% off, you'll find the link for that as well in the description box down below. Patriotic Legacy, you will find the URL in the description box as well. Alexander Mercuris, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.